Everybody loves it.
Hi guys, welcome to the Comics Claptrap.
Hey buddies.
Hey buddies.
Buddies. I'm excited because I'm really happy to see you guys again. I know.
I like your haircut, Rick.
Oh yeah, thank you. Yeah, Ken cut it.
Oh wow.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm excited today, this evening to talk to Chuck Forsman, who is a 3-time Ignatz Award winner. He's a grad from Center of Cartoon Studies. His comic books include Revenger, Celebrated Summer, Slasher, and he's also run a mini comics distro called Oily Comics, which showcased work of some of our favorite cartoonists like Melissa Mendez. And his graphic novels, The End of the Fucking World, and I Am Not Okay With This, have all been published through Fantagraphics, one of our favorite publishers, and they both have been adapted into Netflix original TV shows, so that's pretty exciting. So I'm Not Okay With This actually, I think, debuted in February, right before we are all told to shelter in place, and so hopefully people are binge watching on that as we speak, and we can talk about that. But also we really want to talk about all the comics that Chuck has been producing, and he's producing a comic that he's serializing called Autumna.
Is that how you pronounce it, Autumna?
Well, we'll ask him.
Okay.
Autumna. that he serialized through his Patreon account. So I'm very excited. So Chuck Forsman, welcome to our Zoom program.
Hey, welcome, yay. Chuck.
Oh, thank there you.
That's totally worth it, Josh. I don't know how you
really.
The big reveal.
As if from nowhere comes Chuck Forsman.
I can't believe I'm finally on Comics Claptrap.
Oh, man.
Are you a listener of the Comics Claptrap?
I was, yeah. I mean, yeah, back the during the original run, Melissa and I listened.
I feel
every
a lot
episode.
Older.
We loved
I feel, it. I felt yeah. old then, and I feel a lot older
now. We're all getting older.
Poor listeners.
Oh, I have to tell you, for this episode, I broke out the Pittsburgh.
Oh, cool.
You didn't even tell us. Why?
My husband Ken said, well, maybe he's probably like, yeah, that's great. I'm not really a Steeler fan. But I'm like, I don't have any like Pirates gear out.
What's the connection?
And
though?
I look especially good in this shirt, so I thought I would break it out.
What's
the connection with Pittsburgh?
Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania. I lived there until I was 21 maybe. Yeah, 21. I was brought back there last year. I was brought to Pittsburgh because they shot I'm Not Okay With This there in Pittsburgh. So
okay.
It was kind of a cool. And I used to go there when I was like 13 because my brother went to a school called the Pittsburgh Filmmakers. It was like film program. And it's the first place I went to a Comic-Con, the Pittsburgh Comic-Con, I think 1994. So I have some history with Pittsburgh.
where are you now, Chuck?
I'm in Western Massachusetts.
Oh, like, wow.
3 hours from Boston, 3 hours from New York City.
Oh, okay.
So like kind of in between there.
Oh, so it's pretty late there right now.
Yeah, 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really grateful for you staying up. I guess we should start, like, and we're gonna talk a lot about your comics, but we should talk about the TV adaptions or adaptations sure. of your two books and how that all came about, and how do you feel about a new show that just came out and your whole involvement in it?
Yeah, I guess the very beginning, it happened when I was when I was publishing The End of the Fucking World as mini comics, I didn't know at the time how they got there, but some copies got into Gosh Comics in London. I don't know if you ever heard of that shop.
Yeah.
The Breakdown press folks mini? Are sort of, they work out of there.
Josh is showing the mini.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Comics.
That's one of the minis.
16
yeah.
is the last one.
Right? I think those minis are worth a lot right now.
Yeah, if you get a sucker.
I feel like I've seen them on eBay for a lot of money.
Yeah, I've seen that happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they got into someone's hands.
Yeah, so they ended up in that shop. I found out it was probably John Porcelain. It was Spit and a Half that probably sold them to Gosh. So that's how they, because I had no idea they were even like, you know, in England or like out of the country in a shop, you know. So that's cool. Who ended up, Jonathan Entwistle, the guy who ended up directing both shows, he went in there, you know, he's a comics reader and he picked them up and he just ended up emailing me. Asking if I'd be interested in having it adapted or something. And I kind of didn't take him seriously. It was probably the first time someone had ever approached me with that question. And I was like, I didn't really care. I was just like, yeah, whatever. and he'd done, I think, some commercial work and made some short films, but I ended up watching his stuff that he sent me. And I was like, oh, he's serious. He's really talented. So we just we kept in touch, and it was a long process. You know, it would get set up somewhere, and everyone, you know, this is like the usual TV or movie story, getting something optioned. It's like everyone's excited, yeah, here it goes, it's happening, and then just kidding, the rug's pulled out, it's not happening. And I was kind of, I got some good advice from like James Sturm early on. He was like, just treat it as a lottery ticket, just like, you know, getting a book option. It's, you know, it's like there's a huge chance nothing will ever come of it. So I was kind of prepared for that. But yeah, kudos to John. And he finally got it set up with Clerkenwell, which is the production company. They did a show, their biggest show over here was probably Misfits. And I think it went on Hulu a few years ago. Yeah. It's like a British teen superhero show. Yeah. So they came on board, and that's when things really started to happen. And then they got Channel 4 involved. And then I think right before we went into production, Netflix got interested. So they took the worldwide distribution outside of the UK. And that's basically how that happened.
That also is very like super exciting. Like I think like everybody in the comics industry is always like, whenever somebody gets something optioned, the dream is always like that they never really make it, and that they just keep renewing that option, you know?
Yeah.
So
which is awesome. Like, yeah, especially depending on how much they're paying for your option. It's great. It's like a yearly little check you get if they want to keep optioning it.
Yeah, totally. And like no one's ruining it, or, you know, like, you know,
yeah.
The peers always like to mess it up. So were you happy with the results of that? Because I read the comic way back, and then we watched the show. And I was kind of blown away by how, like, I was like, at first I was like, how are they going to make this, you know, this comic that is like, even though it's like long, it's kind of short, you know, like in terms of like, I was like, how are they going to make this into a long series? And when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, that's how they're going to do it. It's going to depart a lot from the story and add a lot to it and stuff like that. How did you feel how that turned out? And like, did you have a big involvement in how that turned out?
I wasn't super involved. You know, it's like, I call it unofficial involvement. Like, I got pretty close with John. So we would talk a lot, and he would tell me what was going on and everything. But I knew it was out of my hands. And early on, I consciously was like, well, I'm not going to I didn't want to get in to TV. Like, I wanted to keep making comics. So I was like, early on, I was like, all right, I'm not going to like fight to be like a writer or be a producer right away or something, you know? And I always think of adaptations that I enjoy. I always think that they're more successful and more enjoyable when they're not so worried about sticking to the source material.
Yeah.
So I was very like, I was like, I have my book. No one's going to take that from me, no matter what happens with this thing.
Yeah.
I have my book. I made it. I'm happy with it. You know, and lucky enough, it was John who came to me, and he was someone I really learned to trust and love. So, so I was like, I was happy with whatever he decided to do, you know? Cool. And then when I saw it, it was like, it was also like, oh, thank fucking God. I really liked it. And I couldn't believe it. That I had sort of gotten that lucky.
I was reading an article about I'm Not Okay With This, and Jonathan Entwistle was on Entertainment Weekly, and he said he was really drawn to the Sydney character, and this is what he said he wanted to show a character, you know, what does it mean to have to go to school in Pittsburgh and keep these things secret, these mutant type powers, these superhero powers. And he said, I wanted to honor Chuck Forsman's version of a superhero story, mm-hmm. with this idea of the first season being an origin story to one of Chuck Forsman's superheroes rather than Marvel or DC. I think that's so cool. Like, someone just like, this is your superhero, Chuck.
Yeah.
Like, in the same league as like a Marvel, like Spider-Man, Superman, like someone who just is really interested in a character that you created.
I mean, that he's talking about, I'm Not Okay With This, and that when I started that book, the whole thing was, I think I'd seen Scanners for the first time like a year before, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh wow, like that's the coolest X-Men movie like I've ever seen. and I think it just put the seed in my head. I was like, oh well, what would my, if I sort of had the same tone as the end of the fucking world with, you know, the type of characters I write, like what would that, a story with a teenager with powers, what would that look like?
I hadn't read a lot of your works until recently, when I read Another Fucking World, and then when we found out we were interviewing you, I bought like tons of them, like a whole stack of your books, and when I read I'm Not Okay With This, I was like so blown away. I was a huge fan, because I was like, at first I was like, what is this? Is this like a middle grade? Because I felt like you were going for like, your style just kind of looked like a middle grade memoir comic, you know? Like that was going, and then it like takes a twist, and then it takes another twist, and I'm just like, oh shit, this is like the craziest superhero comic I've ever read. Because what you did with it is that you put the character first, over the power. Like, the power, mm-hmm. is almost like maybe a fourth down on the hierarchy, you know, that like, yeah. really just like whatever, it's everything else, and then, oh yeah, she also has this, and it's just like, it was really, we really felt it was a great meditation on depression and on how kids think these days. I'm a high school teacher, so like, it really, oh, cool. It really like, it like the way they talk and the way they move is very high school, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that.
That's totally, yeah, that's exactly, you know, usually, I mean, I hate talking about my own work, but yeah, that was kind of the idea. Like, I didn't want it to be like, you pick it up and go, oh, this is a girl with powers. Like, I wanted it to be like, the powers are just like the annoying manifestation of like her anxiety, or, you know, puberty, or growing up, you know, it's just another element thrown on top of the mess of being that age. So that was like, you know, kind of, and yeah, I'm 37 now, and I'm really worried I'm not going to be able to write teenagers anymore pretty soon. I don't know much how longer I can keep this up. So,
well, the same thing with I'm Not Okay With This. There's certain like there's certain thinking of a teenager that's still the same as when we were teenagers, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I think that's what comes across in I'm Not Okay With It. There's still that weird rebellion outsider group that it's like still there, and it's kind of it's multi-generational, that never ends, you know?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I think that's totally true. I mean, it's just like, I mean, I think the reason I keep coming back to teenagers is just like, because it was a time in my life that I used to obsess over a lot, because I like, mm-hmm. I had a lot of regrets about it, and I, you know, I was depressed the whole time, and I just wanted to grow up so fast. So I didn't really like get to enjoy it. So I think part of me doing these books is just like going through and just sort of putting all those feelings that you have when you're that age out on paper. That was my main goal with the end of the effing world, was I didn't even have like a story. Like when I started, I just had a feeling like a feeling of being that age, like that I just wanted to get out. Like that was like the main goal.
Hey, can we dig back into your publishing history a bit?
Sure.
Because I don't know, it seems like a really kind of fascinating journey to me. So I don't know all the details either. Like when I first became aware of you was when I found out that there was this Oily Comics.
Yeah.
And I subscribed, and like there's this guy and he's mailing out like a ton of minis every month.
This and, maniac.
Well, I thought it was cool. but I guess I didn't know, like, was that your first publishing effort, or you went to CCS, right?
Yeah. So I graduated from the Center for Cartoon Studies, and you know, as you probably know from talking to anybody there, it's very much about, they really instill the, you know, the ability to do everything in comics, design, drawing, publishing, production. So I came out of there just in love with making mini comics. So I had, you know, self-published all my comics I had done. And I, let's see, I'm trying to remember the timeline. So when I started The End of the Fucking World, I had done it in response to my friend Max DeRodriguez, who I met also through CCS. He's a Belgian cartoonist. And he became sort of, he's the same age as me, but he was such a huge mentor figure for me. I learned a lot about work ethic, I think, within comics from him. But he came over for a trip to America, and he brought along this mini comic called Moose, and he was selling it for $1. And you know, it's not like us seeing mini comics. It wasn't like a revelation. You know, it was just a black and white mini comic. But at that time, I think I had just finished Celebrated Summer, which was like Crosshatch City and really big physical pages, and I was just like sick of it. And when I saw this, is like he clearly, you know, drew it in a couple days and just something. And he was like, yeah, I'm just going to do this, sell it for $1, whatever. It's just something to give out. And it just like, it was like the little hook I needed, to just start The End of the Fucking World as a comic that I didn't care whether it looked good. Like I was like, I'm going to remove all the preciousness from it. I didn't want to worry about it being pretty. Oh. And I wanted to sell it for $1, so there was no like, you know, financial thing tied to it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just sort of like removing as much expectation as I could.
I'd love to hear you say that, because
yeah,
you know, from the audience, and that's how it felt. Like it felt like it felt very inspiring, and it felt like here's somebody who just is like paring away all of the distraction and like extra stuff that sometimes come along with like comics and self-publishing, and here's like the pure shit.
Yeah, and as you guys know, that's always a story. That's always, I remember like a couple years before, Eric Reynolds asked me to do a story for Moam, and I just completely froze up for like a year. I tried to do it, you know, a 5-page story for Moam forever, and I just couldn't do it because it was so much pressure. You know, I was like, this has to be the best thing in the world. And it's just like, you know, you can't work under that. Or at least I can't work under that sort of circumstance and pressure.
I was going to say the same thing, because that's one of the things that really inspired me about I'm Not Okay and your books, is that, you know, now at this point in me being a cartoonist, I feel like it's been taking me so long to do any type of project.
Yeah.
I really feel like I have to do better than the last thing, and it's got to look this way, and this person did it this beautifully, so I got to do it better. And I just feel like it's taking me forever, just because I'm just constantly changing it and everything. And just see, you know, like the economy of your lines and your cartooning, you know, only the, like the important things, only the things that needs to come through or is coming through. And you're not trying to like impress anybody with like, you know, some intricate background when that's not what's necessary. I think it's,
and I really like the short episodes, right? Like you're telling like a really tight little piece of story. And then, yeah, you know, and then you can move on to the next one. And it, yeah, you know, it might make a larger story, but you're not sitting down and like pumping out a graphic novel all in one go, it seems like, which can be intimidating.
Yeah. And the short chapters, I think they're what, they're like 10 pages a chapter, I think. That was another huge thing. It was like, once I got going, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this on a regular schedule. And that was another aspect that was sort of new to me. Like, because at that time, everyone, you know, there were no comics publishers were really putting out small comics. It was all big books. So I had always assumed I missed that train, but it's like, you know, once I realized, oh, I can just do this myself. So I sort of accidentally fell into the idea of serialization through this book, through that book. And I fell in love with that because it was, I mean, at the same time of removing all sort of expectations from it, it was also gratifying to have, you know, something to print up every single month and send to like the 300 people reading it. And, you know, so it wasn't so much of like, you know, it was like that monthly ticking of the time clock. It was like I would still get a little gratification from people, but, you know, responding to it. And I wasn't just holed up for 2 years working on it.
I was just going to ask, like, what was the inspiration then to publish other people?
Oh, yeah. So once a few months in, I was like, oh, this is really fun. So of course I selfishly wanted all my friends to do it too. And I was like, hey, so I just reached out to like Melissa, who's my partner, Melissa Mendes. And I think I asked Max, cause he was still doing that Moose comic. I was like, I'll print the translation, in America. And you know, I just started to ask, you know, friends of mine that I just knew through comics to do that same format, you know. And I wasn't saying like they had to do, you know, a whole series. They could just do one comic or whatever. And somehow it grew very fast to me putting out 5 comics a month. And I bought like a risograph, and I had a laser printer, which I was using to do that stuff. And I just started pumping these out. You know, it wasn't like art for art's sake. It was like, it was also helping me pay the rent. Cause I, at that time we had just moved and I couldn't find a job. We had moved like out into the country where we kind of are now. And Oily sort of became my job. Cause I was like, I had nothing else to do. And I was like, well, if I want to make comics right now, this, you know, we were able to live pretty cheaply out here. So it was totally doable. Sorry, I got lost. I lost the track here.
No, that's fine. No, it's crazy because you know, me and my friend Jesse also kind of tried to start like a distro publishing company. It was so hard. It was just so fucking hard. And like every time I thought it would be easy, and I tried it just like doing it myself, and it was like, it's like, this is so fucking, just going in the mailbox was so hard. You know, like just mailing shit out was like fucking insane. I was like, I hate this. And so
it gets to be a thankless job too. It's like, oh yeah, business, this grind. And but I feel like with those comics, the minis and in that format, it seemed like was a way for you to kind of experiment with style and kind of experimenting with like certain characters or.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just working on that the end of the fucking world for 16 issues. And then I started another similar series. But it was, you know, it was tough because it was also the first comic I did where people were like coming up to me at conventions being like, this is awesome. You know, that was a totally new feeling to me. So I knew, you know, of course that added pressure, but it was helpful that I sort of started Oily and locked myself into this monthly grind because I was just like, okay, I have to do my 10 pages. Like, this is just, you know, it's my job now. I have to do this. because everybody else is doing it. I asked them to do it. And like what you said about like the printing and shipping, that's the thing I think that made me sort of, I always think I started Oily on accident. Like, I mean, obviously I consciously did it, but I love printing and shipping. Like something weird inside of me. I love doing that stuff. I don't like keeping track of sales and that stuff was like, I had like a couple spreadsheets and it was just like, I hated it.
Like how much to pay people and stuff. That was
I would keep track of the royalties and all that stuff. And the other part of this was Tony Shenton, which I can't not talk about because that enabled me to put these comics in shops and you know, it was probably like 10 to 15 shops at its height, but like places like Floating World in New York City, they would order tons of everything. And I would like, on the rare trip down there, I would like walk in there and be a secret shopper and I would see like, you know, two whole shelves of Oily comics. And I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe this.
I'm pretty sure
that was Tony
in Berkeley at Comic Relief. And I think that's like, saw like a huge stack and I was like, this is a whole thing. You know, it's not just like, you know, some mini on some bottom shelf somewhere. It's like there's this whole publishing phenomenon happening.
I think it was like because they were all the same size too, I accidentally created a brand. Like like people, like you would see them on the shelf, they're all the same size, black and white. Like, oh, you know, those are the Oilies. Like
makes you want to collect them all.
Yeah. There's still people. Yeah. I still get emails every month from people asking if I have any.
Tony Shenton, you can always tell when Tony Shenton had visited a shop because so many zines and mini comics. Yeah. You know, like he was such a character, and then like he'd come to like every store like at least once a month, and you go to comics to go buy your comics, and there's a stack of minis, and you know that Tony Shenton was there. You know.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, and Brian Hibbs, he was an early he emailed me out of the blue, like really early on. He had ordered some and just told me how awesome he thought it was. And he was like, I'll carry this every day of the week. That was cool. I never had like, I remember starting out and like making my own for this early comic. I did Snake Oil, making like an order form for wholesale that I like blind shipped to just shops around the country. And I got zero responses. So like, skip to a few years later, like Brian Hibbs emailing me out of the blue, you know, saying, hey man, I'm selling tons of these little things. You know, that was like, whoa, okay.
So how long did you do that? I was on a
track. I did it about 2 years, I think. Yeah. And then I burned out. I got what do you call that? Like kind of, I think I got tendonitis or something from all the stapling and folding. and it just hit a point like physically I was like, my arm was hurting. And it hit a point where I was like, okay, what am I doing? Like I had to reckon with myself. Am I a cartoonist or am I a publisher? And I, for whatever reason, I decided I couldn't do both of those things. So I very pretty quickly ramped down the publishing and decided that I wanted to concentrate on my own work. So that's kind of, I didn't make like a big announcement that I was shutting it down. I published like maybe a couple comics, you know, maybe a year or two after the monthly thing stopped, but yeah, I just sort of made that decision that it was, you know, it was over. I wanted to draw comics more than I wanted to print and ship
stuff. good choice.
Yeah.
Speaking of Max, I just picked up this book as well.
Oh yeah, Hobo Mom. About
it, but I don't know when it came out. They just had it in the bookstore. I really I just had a really quick question about this book.
I don't know about Hobo Mom. What is Hobo Mom?
It's dope. It's Chuck and Max.
Max.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. You guys don't tell us in the book how you divided the work. So like, it's not like one person wrote it, one person drew it, or anything. Yeah. So it seems like it's like a mashup of you guys. I feel like I look at a panel and I'm like, oh, I think Chuck did the tree, or maybe Max did the. I don't. You know, I have no idea. It's a really interesting, it's great. The person at the comic book store that I got this from said that this was their favorite Chuck Forsman book.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know when that came out, but it's really great. I love stuff that way.
Yeah, that book has a weird story because we did it. God, I'm trying to remember what year it was, like 2014, I think we did it. So we got, Max and I both got invited to a festival in Italy. Mm-hmm. And part of them bringing us over is they wanted us to do a special comic for this collective there called Derabule. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. But they're like sort of a collective of really awesome cartoonists in Bologna. And so Matt, like, I don't think we were going to collaborate at first, but Max and I always kind of wanted to try it. So you're like, oh, well, what if we do a book together? And Matt, you know, he's across the ocean. So, you know, we couldn't physically work on the pages together. So I think it started, I kind of did a draft of the story in a sketchbook and I scanned it all and sent it to him. And I think he did another draft over it. And then we did all of it in the computer, which was I think a first for both of us as far as like drawing completely digitally. I think I penciled it, Max inked it, and then I would take it back and add the halftone and we kept passing them back and forth. There's a little bit of both of us, you know, sort of finishing it up, but it is weird. Like when I look at it, I always do forget about that book myself because it doesn't. When I look at it, I don't see it as my book because it feels like a third cartoonist.
Yeah.
But it's cool because I think I'm not a big collaborator. But that was a cool experience because I think Max and I both have that thing where we're both not. I don't think we don't have a style. Uh-huh. That's the thing. I won't speak for Max, but that's the thing I always say about myself is I'm a stylist cartoonist and I embrace that. So I think we were both able to sort of mold and gel around each other's mm-hmm. style. And it was easy for us to sort of like we were probably trying to do impressions of each other.
It's interesting when you say, you know, you don't think you have a certain style, because when I see your work, I really feel like that you really love comics and the history of comics and that you are inspired by a lot of the comics cartoonists that came before, like, yeah. You know, a lot of the, you know, I mean, I don't want to be presumptuous, but like, you know, maybe Jack Curry or, you know, or, you know, even like Charles Schultz, but like, yeah. I just feel like you're someone who you can tell through your drawing and that you're really interested in the whole.
Yeah. Whole yeah. Act. I kind of see it as like putting on costumes. Like I get sick of drawing one way. So like, I feel like for every book, I sort of decide how I'm going to draw it. Like, you know, I Am Not Okay With This it was very much like, okay, I'm going to look at a lot of Seagar, Popeye, Thimble Theater. And, and like when you start the book, it's very Seagar, and then it sort of morphs, at least to my eye, it morphs more into whatever it turns into just for me, you know, drawing a book and getting more comfortable. But yeah, I do enjoy doing that. And yeah, like I'm trying to think, like sort of when I discovered my whole thing about this, I was in CCS and Ivan Brunetti came. And he was doing these portfolio reviews and I brought my work and I, you know, I was like very nervous because I love Ivan Brunetti. And, yeah. And I told him, I was like, hey, I'm having a really hard time finding my style. Like, I feel like I don't, you know, have, you know, Joe Lambert was in my class who was like, mm-hmm. you know, it was like being in school with Spider-Man. You know, it's like this guy just had amazing power and, you know, he was like fully formed. And so like, you know, it was tough being in a class with that guy. You know, you're like, well, what do I have? I got nothing. Like I just don't have a natural way of drawing. At least I felt that way. And he was like, he just said, you know, just keep doing it and it'll come. Which I think there's truth to that, but I don't think that ever happened for me. I think I gained experience and more confidence making comics, but I still don't know if I have, I don't feel like I have like a default drawing style that I fall back on.
Which is amazing to me, because like when you look at your books, like each individual book, like I was reading Revenger, and that has a whole different style than I'm Not Okay With This, which has a whole different style than Hobo Mom. And like, how do you maintain that if it's not your style? Like, I guess that's the hard thing for me to wrap my head around. Is like, I do kind of have a style, and if I try to do something, let's say like I just recently tried to do something in R. Crumb style, you know, like I can't maintain that. I can't maintain that for a book, you know, because I don't have knowledge to do that. How do you maintain that? Like, how do you maintain like the same style for Revenger and then switch up and then do a book like I'm Not Okay With This and then maintain that style, you know?
It's definitely a process. Like when I did Revenger, I was super, I tried to do it for like a year or two. Like I was super scared to do it because it was such a huge shift that I was like, oh no, like what are people going to think of this? Like they're going to be like, oh, this guy sucks. What is he doing? He's trying to do like, you know, mainstream comics. What a sellout. you know, that was just like my own, I was putting my own stuff on there. But I think it's just like, it's like, okay, I want to draw in this style, but it's I think you just have to like keep doing it. Like I drew the first issue of Revenger, I think two or three times until I felt like I was finally, I mean, even then I can't, like even now I can't look, like I think it's horrible, but I mean, that's like a, you know, every cartoonist will say that probably, but it, you know, it took me a long time to get comfortable in drawing such a different and like just staging in a different sort of style than I was used to. And it's like, you know, I can clearly see like as books progress, like what I'm changing and I'm getting more comfortable or, you know, things like that. It's not easy. Like to me, it's a mess. Like what you're saying, like, how do I keep it up? I don't think I'm doing it.
But I mean that mess is why it's awesome. Like it's basically what you're saying is when I read Revenger and Slasher and what the book that you are serializing right now on Patreon.
Yeah,
is that what I see? Is it's like a basically an image book, but done with an indie aesthetic that's kind of messy. And it's amazing because that nobody does that. You know, nobody. If you read an image book that's like Revenger, you don't have these panels of these quiet panels of someone just turning their head, but you do see that a lot in indie comics, like Chester Brown or something. And then you smash those two things together, and then plus you put a weird style on top of it that's like minimalist, and it's just together it creates like a super mess, but amazing. You know,
Amazing. I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah.
You said it way better than I ever could.
I feel like when you go back and forth, like, or those different styles, I mean, that is sort of taking a huge risk. You know, there's people that are like, hey, I'm so used to your,
the
effing world. And then Revenger comes. But, you know, just like Tim said, even though it's different, there is something that's, you know, unifying, like there is something Chuck Forsman about it. And I think maybe I think the main thing is probably the focus on characters. Mm-hmm. And as like we were talking about, you know, I'm Not Okay With This, just the character first before everything else. And I did want to talk about, you know, how you prepare or come up with a character, and where that comes from, or is there just this time where you just like focus on like their backstory and how do you develop those characters?
Yeah, it feels different every book, but I think for the most part, there'll be a process of me thinking about a story or a character for a long time, and it's just in my head. But a lot of it is like, you know, I'll use a lot of first person narration, whether it's, you know, someone writing in a diary or just their thoughts. And to me, that is I think early on, I sort of like listening to like dialogue in movies. It's like the thing I latched onto is, like, oh, you can like, you know, you can tell so much by way of the, you know, the word, the, by, you know, what words a character uses to, you know, what words they choose to say and how they say it and how much they talk or, you know, so I kind of latched onto that. And I guess my whole thing is like, especially writing like those narrations as I'm, I guess it's like maybe what like an improv actor is doing is just getting into that costume and just writing from that point of view. Like, there's, you know, and I will like, I'll write a backstory maybe and like, you know, do that world building thing, but I rarely will put that stuff in because I find that when I'm reading stuff like that really annoys me. Like I like there being a little challenge of like putting the puzzle pieces together when I'm reading a comic. So, but I think it helps to have some of that planning done because I think it comes through anyway, you know, at least, you know, it shows a confidence of what, that at least I know who these characters are. Even if I'm not giving you everything. But that's a tough, that is a tough question.
No, it just seems like, you know, because you're so good at character development, that it just, you know, I just want
to. Yeah, and a lot of it, you know, I said the word improv, and that's something that I.
That's awesome.
I do a lot, and I don't know where I got. I mean, maybe it was like, you know, you brought up Chester Brown, and I, you know, I was a huge Chester Brown fan, and I think that's how he did Ed the Happy Clown. Like he was making that up as he went, and. Mm-hmm. And that's how I did, that's kind of like how I started doing comics. I think it was just like impatience. Like I didn't want to plan out a story. So I just like, I just wanted to go. And like, that's how like the end of the fucking world started. Like I had that first issue sort of brewing in my head and it just sort of came out of me like vomit. And
that's the best time. That's the best.
Yeah. Time. Yeah. Yeah. But it was great because it's sort of like, it set up like the rules of whatever this world I was going to do. It was like, okay, like now I have to build on top of this. It was like, the base of the building like came out and I now had like boundaries I had to work within. And I think I really enjoyed doing that and sort of not necessarily knowing where I'm going, but you know, working within sort of rules I put down for myself. And seeing where that takes me and watching the characters bounce off those walls. And
I think that feeling of like just vomiting out like a story is what we all are constantly in search of.
Yeah. You know?
Like I think I did it once and now every time I start a project and I get stuck, I'm just like, just vomit it out. It's like,
yeah.
Like last time, yeah. It's so hard to get that again. You know, like you just, I don't know how many times you are probably felt like that, but I think, you know, totally. In life, you only get a couple of those, you know.
yeah. No, I mean, I still look at that book, and I was like, "There's no way I can do that again." Like,
I think you know the connection, you know, the character connection through all your books is great. Like all the characters are so realized. But I think another connection tissue through all your books is your pacing. I think the pacing of the story and the pacing of the characters, and then. It's a weird pace, which I think is what I think it draws me to it. It's like this kind of not slow, but like deliberate pace. And then there's these like weird, like fast, like and Josh put it the best today when we're talking about it. It's just like a fast shift into brutality. Like, it'll just be like everything's okay. Yeah. You know, it's like it just like shifts a little bit. And you're kind of a jar, and that's I think that's for me, that's addicting a little bit, you know, because you're just waiting. It's sort of like I guess EMD or whatever, you're just waiting for that drop.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's fun. When you're describing that, it made me think of the music I grew up listening to, and I'm thinking of Nirvana right now because that whole thing that I guess they took from the Pixies, the soft, loud, soft.
Yeah.
And maybe that's kind of where I sort of learned the magic of being able to, you know, not go, you know, I'm not going to go 100% the whole story because then that, you know, by 10 pages in, you're like the reader's overwhelmed. Yeah. So it's good to vary that. So, you know, you go slow and be deliberate and slow time down. And then when you do jump into some brutal violence, it's that much more shocking, I think. And more effective.
Definitely.
I mean, does that the whole thing of serializing to get work into that, just sort of like it's kind of more thrilling, like, you know, like the cliffhangers in each issue.
And you have to do it. It helps because it's like breaking things up into little chunks. It's much easier to work that way, like, as opposed to like thinking about the 200 pages in front of you. It helps me just like, okay, I just have to do, I cut out all the rest of it and I'm just focusing on these 10 pages. And that really helped me move forward.
And in your 10 page stories, it's not, you don't end with a, like, just kind of in the middle of a thought to be continued. Like, in each of those short bits, you really do provide a beginning, a middle, and an end. Like, it really is punctuated well.
Yeah, that was the other thing it taught me. It was like working in that is like, you know, it had to sort of be its own little story within a greater work.
Not everybody. Right,
thanks for saying that. I don't know if I really am. I don't know.
can we talk a little bit about the newest thing that you're doing, which is how do you pronounce that? What did you say?
Oh man, I don't know. I was laughing at you guys because I don't even know how to pronounce it. I think I say Automa. I think that's what I say, but
Automa.
Okay. Automa sounds cool too. It's just the word automatic cut. You know.
I love that. I think it's like
you do.
Yeah, I love it. Josh was showing it today, and I think this might be the first thing that I might Patreon back because.
Oh my gosh. Jeez.
It's so good. It's like it's amazing because that's the kind of vibe that I'm seeking. And I think what Josh was saying about how there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, but then there's also like a cliffhanger sort of.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's not a cliffhanger, like, oh, is he gonna die? But it's like something that is like, oh, I'm very excited for this. I'm very excited to read the next one because I need to know what happens next. What is your process? Do you have the whole story written out already? How do you start serializing something like that?
For that book, I think I wrote it. I roughly wrote, you know, I don't write tight scripts, but I write, you know, I'll just write out paragraphs of what's going to happen. And for this book, I think I've written it out maybe like 3 or 4 times because I keep changing my mind as I go, which is like, it's part of it. You know, it's like, I feel like some people get disappointed when they, you know, they always want their authors to like be these masters that know exactly what they're doing from the get-go.
Yeah. But,
you know, for me, it's like that's the fun part is, you know, in the middle of working on a story and being like, well, that sucks. That original thing I was going to do, like, this is getting really boring. So I'm going to make a left turn here and then see what happens. Or the characters sort of take over themselves and they're going to do things that I didn't anticipate before. This book, I mean, thank you so much for complimenting because I really need it because I hate this book right now.
why do you hate it? Like, is it just a struggle to do or?
It is. Well, it's, they're bigger chapters. I mean, I do like 18 to 24 pages a chapter. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask about that too. Like, why 19 pages? It's such a weird number.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I wanted to like up the page count with each. Okay, so let me back up. So when I started this, I wanted this to feel like, again, with me taking another influence and putting that on, was I wanted it to read like manga, which I don't know if I'm doing it, but this is what's coming out. Like, at least when I started, you know, the project, that's what I had in my head. I wanted it to read really, I wanted you to have quick page turns and try not have too many panels in the page. Though I think I failed at that. But, you know, I wanted it to be like sort of an action-y book that, you know, a real page turner, you know, I didn't want the reader to dwell on stuff. And it was also like, I wanted it to be, it's like my Terminator 2 comic. Like,
yeah, it is.
That's like a huge, huge influence, which I'm sure anyone could read it and tell you that. Terminator, those first two movies are some of my favorite things in the world. But yeah, so yeah, and I mashed it in with like this boxing stuff and cyborgs and time travel. And why am I hating it? Because I'm working on issue 14, and that's just, man, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I'll be done with issue 18. That was the original plan, but I just don't know. And it's just a thing, you know. It's like I go through a process of like really enjoying something, and then I hate it. And the other thing that happened was Melissa and I bought a house last October, and we spent like 2 months fixing it. So I was like, I was not doing any comics for like two or three months. So that was the other thing I'm struggling with, is like getting back into that groove in a new house, a new studio. You know, and there's tons of other projects that I'm also trying to chip away on. So it's just like, you know, when I don't look at it for a few months, and I look and then I pick it back, I'm like, man, this sucks. Like, I really, you know, I just like, I'm a negative Nancy. I'll like put it down. I'll insult the story in my head so much that I really start to believe it.
So it's maybe not this book that's the problem. It's just like every project ends up being like that to maybe. Some extent.
I think I sometimes feel like I bit off more than I can chew with this one. It feels more ambitious, at least story-wise, and beyond my, I feel like it's a little beyond my drawing abilities. That's the other thing I struggle with.
I think it looks great.
I think it looks amazing.
Yeah, I was watching. Sorry, go ahead, Tim. I've been reading it as PDFs, and I just feel like I want my screen to be so much bigger, because I really love how you're doing like the like kind of thin line work for the most part, and then these big fat blobs of black.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I'll tell you who I'm ripping off for this. So this was when I started this, it was like the manga, the pacing of manga, but I was looking at Sin City again, which was probably like one of the first comics that blew my young mind. And I was like, wow, this looks way different than X-Men. This is crazy. And then like through that, learning who Frank Miller was ripping off is Jose Munoz, who did Alack Center, which I think they just put out those two big collections a couple years ago.
Yes.
So those, oh yeah, and I think Keith Giffen famously like got called out by the Comics Journal for maybe stealing panels. I don't know, or being influenced. Maybe he was just doing what I do. I don't know. But that was a different time. They loved calling people out for that stuff. But like looking at like especially the Sinner stuff, Munoz, like I was just like taken with that. That thin line, and then just like chunks of black ink. I just really wanted to live in that world and try and do a version of it.
It's really striking, and that's what I was saying, like I wanted to my monitor to be huge so that I could just see those like, you know, giant contrasts.
The other thing was I had just come off like two Revenger books and Slasher, which were both color comics, and I was like, I'm gonna jump back into just black and white, man. Like I really want to do black and white again. Like I was really missing it. That was the other like thing I think that pushed me to draw it in that way.
I like hearing your explanation earlier about how you write stories, because that's how I felt when I was reading this book. At some point, I don't know if I should reveal it, but like at some point something crazy happens to this character, and I was like, oh man, I felt like when I was reading it, I felt like I was walking this story with you. Like I was like, he doesn't know what's happening. Well, he doesn't know what's going to happen either. And I don't know what's going to happen. So it just felt like I was with you on this. You know, you were just like, I was like, oh my God, it went somewhere else. And now I'm just like, what is happening? And I'm like, I'm sure he's probably like, I don't know what I'm going to do for the next issue either.
Yeah, man.
Like, yes, this is like that type of immediacy. And that's why serialized comics is so great. That's why manga is like when you read a chapter of Naruto, I'm sure the artist wasn't like planning it for, you know, another couple issues. He's just like, I'm just gonna fucking draw this, you know. So
Yeah. And like I became really close with cartoonist Michelle Fife, who does Copra. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he totally lives in that serialization world. And I think we really kind of bonded over that idea of what it's like to be on a deadline like that, and, you know, making things work, and, you know, just having that tight squeeze, and like, you're not really sure what the next, what's going to happen in the next issue, but you got to finish this issue first. I think we kind of bonded with that over the last few years. And he's someone that he's like, I don't know. He does like, I feel like three times the amount of work that I do.
His G.I. Joe book is pretty crazy.
Yeah. 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 he's a huge, huge, inspiration to me. But yeah, we're the same way. We'll whenever we get together, we just like talk about how much we suck.
oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's good. It's like a healthy thing for both of us. We, you know, it's like, it's a safe space for us to both like bash ourselves. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he seems like a pretty confident guy.
yeah, I think he might put that out. I think that's,
yeah, his, you're telling his secrets.
Him, yeah, no. I feel like, but he, deep down, he is this one of the sweetest guys I know. He's really great. He's probably gonna listen to this and shoot me an email.
I
know it.
I whatever you're doing with that this Otoma or whatever, I think you just gotta keep doing it. I think it's a great, it's amazing. And even if it like turns out that nothing pays off, and you way are overreaching your drawing abilities, it's neat.
No, man, that's why I keep telling myself. I mean, I've come very close to just dumping the story and just like messaging my patron saying, I can't do this anymore. But I think I'm over that hump. Like I'm like, all right, I'm like more than halfway. I have to see this thing through.
But like,
even if
you did that, it would be fun to just be part of that journey.
No, exactly. Yeah. I don't want to pull like Chester Brown underwater and leave everyone hanging, you know, especially since I have like, you know, these Patreons reading along is like,
I know,
at least for them, even if I never like collect it anywhere, at least for them, I'm going to do this.
Are you
but like 14 issues is pretty crazy though.
It is.
So, they're long issues. Right,
sure, I feel like you have accomplished something, even though you feel like it isn't finished. I feel like.
Yeah, it's just a matter of ending it.
End it. Yeah, maybe there'll be one more issue to go.
I'm also like, part of me with this book especially, I'm thinking a lot about editing it when it's all done. Like when I finish the last issue, I envision putting it away for 6 months, coming back to it, and then sort of carving away at it, like taking out stuff that doesn't need to be there and maybe adding some stuff that I felt like I didn't fully explain. And yeah, so, and I've never really done that before. Usually I'm just like, you know, whatever I finish on that last day, that's it. Send it to the printer. It's done. I don't ever want to look at it again. But this time I'm thinking, I'm sort of leaving that open in my head. Like, okay, I'm going to let myself some time to maybe sculpt this after I'm done.
That's kind of exciting, because you know Fantagraphics would probably be super happy to hear that. It's like a
edit, or whoever
edit of like the original. It's like, oh, a reason to buy the graphic novel version.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm guilty of doing that. I did that with I'm Not Okay With This. I added some pages. I think it was printed twice, and then I added more, which I feel bad about, but I think it needed it.
I think that's great.
Yeah, that was at the behest when it was being my friend Max, his company he co-runs, Lampoint et Moi, they were going to publish it, and he emailed me. Mm-hmm. You know, this is so opposite of working with like Eric Reynolds at Fantagraphics, where they're very hands off. They're like, "You're the cartoonist, you do it," you know. But Max, you know, this is France. We're talking, this is like big time French, Franco-Belgian stuff. And he's like, well, I think you could add some here. And, you know, there's no explanation for why this happened. and I'm really pissed off for a week. And then I go, yeah, he's probably right.
So is Otoma the main thing comic that you're working on right now?
Yeah, I'm doing that. I have some, I'm, You know what? I'll give you guys a little scoop. I'm not going to say.
Scoops, our first scoop.
Yeah, because the deal is signed. I won't give you the title, but I'm doing it's a collaboration I'm doing with Benjamin Mara.
We're going to do
original sci-fi story that we're going to collaborate. And yeah.
That's exciting.
I'm basically the writer. Ben's going to draw it. I'm going to color it. That's sort of what it's going to, I think that's how it's going to work out.
Can you tell us who it's for?
We don't have a publisher yet. But we have someone who's funding it. But we're like free to take it wherever we want once it's done.
So is it already happening? Like, is it in the works?
Yeah, I'm like in the middle of like a draft. So we're going to do like, I'm going to try and do it. I'm not going to write Ben a script. I'm going to do layouts for him. That he can work, loose layouts that he can work over. So, once I finish this issue of Automa, I'm going to really jump into that, getting that first pass done for him. But that's I'm really psyched to do that. And I have projects that I really want to do. I've been obsessing over, like 70s horror comic magazines. Yeah. Like, I really like this one, Web of Evil. Which is like only 3 issues of this came out. And I got like 2 of them at a convention this year. And it's got like early Bernie Wrightson in here and some other people, I've been really into horror stuff and I really want to do like a horror comic of some sort. Inspired by that format. So
yeah. You have a horror movie podcast, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't listened to it.
I started a podcast with my friend Dale. It's called Bat and Spider, and we watch like low budget horror movies and talk about them.
That's
fun. Can you guys see the sweat on my head? It's so hot in here.
It's hot.
I'm gonna have to put the AC unit in. Today was like our first day in the 80s here.
Oh wow.
So it's sort of like a shock. So I'm just like been sweating all day. Like, oh my god, it's hot.
Are you doing okay with the I don't know what the shelter in place quarantine situation is like where you are, but
Yeah. I mean, we're pretty lucky that we like just moved in here. Yeah, we're doing okay. It's I'm the one who gets groceries, so I go out like once a week and get groceries, and we have a yard now, so Melissa is out there a lot, and I just got my first skateboard, my first new skateboard since I was like 13, so I'm very excited to break my neck on there.
Yeah, but you can't go anywhere with it.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, we're pretty rural, so there's like. We have like a walking trail that they didn't shut down. So we could probably go on there.
Nice. Can you ollie?
Yesterday I got the board in the mail, put it together, and I did an ollie. I couldn't believe it.
Like riding a bike?
I don't know. I think I did a quick flip one time, like when I was like 13, and I remember like that day was very vivid in my mind. I was very excited about that.
I was toying with the idea of buying a skateboard again because I was like, I want to buy a, because when I was a kid, all I wanted was a Hussoy, like a Christian Hussoy.
Oh yeah.
That's all I wanted, and I never got it. And so I saw it, and now I'm an adult, I have money, and I'm like, I can get it. And someone was like, you're going to break your arm or something, bro. You're like, when you're 40, you can't just be on a skateboard anymore. And then the very next day, a friend of mine like broke his arm, and I was like, it's not. Maybe I'll just buy it and hang it on my wall.
I was a terrible skater like all through my youth and 20s and like early 30s. And I just like, I would roll around everywhere. Like it was a form of transportation, but I was I was never able to really nail much in the way of tricks.
Yeah, me neither.
But by the time I hit like kind of my mid 30s, like I caught a rock under one of the wheels and went flying, and I really was shaken up a lot more. I would fall all the time when I was a kid and just bounce right back up. But
yeah, your mortality kind of in the face. Yeah.
Mortality and just your elasticity isn't quite there. You know, you're just
like, I mean, I went around in circles in the driveway yesterday, you know, for like an hour and tried to ollie. And then this morning I woke up and I was like, oh my God, my whole body. My whole body hurts.
Protect that drawing. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah.
I'm a huge fan now. I think Rena and Josh were already big fans, but I'm very happy to have discovered your work, and I think I'm gonna buy a ton more of it.
Oh man, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I honestly think, and then I'm not trying to just be like complimentary here, but it is very inspiring how you do comics, because I really feel like you are when you get to this point, and one of the questions I was going to ask you earlier, and you can answer this enough, but like, you know, when you get to a point where you have a kind of a moderate success, you know, like when we started drawing mini comics, you're right, it's just like throwing it up and like, who the fuck cares, I'm just gonna draw it, no one's gonna read it, it doesn't cool, I'm doing it for myself, I'm making it myself. But then you get to the point where people are publishing your work and your little mini comic is worth a lot of money on eBay and you have a TV show. I think the normal tendency is to be like, oh, now I gotta be so good and the pressure is on and you gotta draw. Yeah. You haven't, it doesn't seem like you have succumbed to that. And I think it's amazing that you're still doing these books with the same mini comics vigor, you know?
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I try. Yeah. You're exactly right. Like with the added attention with the TV shows, especially, there is that. You know, there's that pressure to be God, I gotta be better. I gotta be perfect.
I think you're doing great. But, that's very inspiring.
Yeah, but you know, I just sort of like, but I've been down that road even before I had any success. And I know what that feeling is like and I know what works for me. So that's why I still, you know, I print Automa at home and send it out to my, you know, subscribers. You know, I still do almost every book that way first. Because it's the mode I'm comfortable working in, and I, you know, I have complete control, and I don't have to worry about, you know, what anyone else is like, what any other pressure is being put on it. You know, it's just me and my mind in a wrestling match.
So it works for you, but I think it works for the work too. Like it really comes across.
I appreciate it.
Ultima is also printed. You printed also?
Yeah, I print it. Yeah.
Okay.
Just on that. I've seen the laser printer back there. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exciting. I want to try. I can't wait to get an issue
like this. There's my proof I keep.
Hmm. Yeah, Chuck, can you talk about your Patreon? Or
is it just Chuck? It's patreon.com/Chuck, I think.
Yep.
Which is kind of hilarious.
Wow.
I'm glad the TV show didn't get it first.
I think I signed up pretty early on and just snagged it. Yeah, so I used to put out an issue every month, but now it's just when I finish an issue, if you're signed up, you'll get charged. The lowest one is $3. You know, I send it as letters, so it's very, you know, it's cheap for me to send that way. So yeah, even if you just sign up for $3, you'll get the issue in the mail and access to the digital stuff. And I have a special store for patrons to buy back issues, so I'll reprint stuff if you want to get the physical ones.
Right. Yeah, I think your digital long box is a good feature. Like, cause I just joined kind of recently because I didn't know you had a Patreon until recently. And
I always forget to talk about that. Yeah. I put up a lot of my old comics in digital form up there as PDFs and CBRs. So
if you come to the Patreon late, you can get all caught up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm super inspired to start drawing comics again.
Good.
Just knowing. Wait, you stopped, Rena?
Yeah, but just knowing. I did do some last night.
Good.
Ken would attest I was actually writing last night through the middle.
I'm inspired to print things out and bring things
to the box. I mean, it's inspiring that Chuck is also struggling like we are, but he's just amazing and still
bringing up
14 issues.
Well, keep up the good work, Chuck. Thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, it was an honor to finally be on Comics Clap. Like, this is like amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun. It was super fun. Thanks so much. And
thank you.
Yeah, go get put on some air conditioning.
Yeah, I'm going to go cool off.
Bye, buddies.
All right, see you, buddies.
Bye-bye.